members this morning. We have in front of us Senator Stump and Senate File 3631, the Omnibus E-12 Education Supplemental Budget Bill. Senator Stump, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The track that the education bill is taking, it's kind of in two different places right now. In the Finance Committee, all the divisions actually were put into one large finance bill. But because the E-12 Education Finance Bill has provisions relating to levies that affect this committee, and so that's why we're here. We have a number of provisions relating to tax levies and want to air those past your committee. Mr. Chairman, there's an amendment that I would like to just alert you to and maybe ask if someone would move that. That's the A-12 amendment.
Senator Larson moves the A-12 amendment on behalf of Senator Stump.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Larson. What I'll do is I'll quickly go through the amendment and then give you a little bit of an overview of what's in the education bill in general, and then Mr. Nauman can go through the tax levy tracking sheet and also some of the provisions that are in the education bill itself. The amendment has the first on page one. The new language there relates to provisions that are in the education bill relating to a reciprocity agreement that is in the original or in the language of the bill. And this has just been kind of worked out over the last weekend. As you know, reciprocity is between Minnesota and some of our surrounding states. And some of the school districts, in particular the ones in southwestern Minnesota, have an association with the state of South Dakota, and that language pertains to that. The language on the top of page two is a proposal that Senator Saxhog brought to the Education Committee. And that relates to the language that appears, the ballot language that appears on the ballot when voters are asked to renew an existing referendum. And the language reflects what hopefully is a balance between not necessarily tilting it one way or another. The feeling on the part of Senator Saxhog and some of those that testified in committee is that where you see the existing language kind of gave it a tilt away from voting for it. And I don't know if it was just psychological or if it was exactly what, but this language hopefully will be a little more balanced in addressing that issue. The next provision on the middle of page three relates to a provision that we somehow overlooked in our existing committee, and that is in allowing the intermediate districts to have an increase in the building lease levy. We raised the building lease levy from $100 to $150 for all of the districts, but did not increase that for the intermediate districts. And so the same percentage increase from $25 to $37 is for the intermediates. And then I believe the lines are 25 through 27 relates back to the
this is Rushford-Peterson.
That's the Rushford-Peterson. There's language in the bill relating to a recapture of some of the money that was appropriated for the flood during the special session for the flood communities and the schools in the flood communities. Some of that was not spent and then reappropriated to other districts that needed the additional aid. And then the language on the bottom of the page is language it's new language that allows districts, up to three districts, to look at kind of a way of bringing their transportation a look at their transportation expenditures and seeing if there isn't some way to consolidate, to work together, save some money on transportation between districts. And on page, that language goes over onto page 4, and then I believe the language at the 4.7 relates more, it's a technical language, and 4.8, I believe, is downsizing one of the, there's a task force in here from 16 members down to 12. And that is the amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, if I could just, if the committee would so.
Well, Senator Stump, on the page 4 of the amendment.
Oh, okay.
On line 4. The word benefits says the report must analyze the cost savings and operating efficiencies to the districts as well as the benefits to school bus drivers, school bus maintenance workers, clerical workers, blah, blah, blah. It implies benefits there might not be benefits. There may be some consolidation of some things. Would a word like impact be better than benefit? I mean, that implies there's something positive happening that may not be the case to every employee.
Mr. Chairman, it could be effect or impact effects. I guess that would certainly work.
Let's see if council can suggest maybe a better word that doesn't imply that everybody's going to see some positive impact of this.
Consequences.
How about impacts?
Okay. Right.
Members, what do you think of the word impact?
I'd incorporate that, Mr. Chair, in the amendment.
Senator Larson incorporates on line 4.4, delete benefits and insert impact.
Maybe not certain.
What's his tool?
Right. Pick that out.
Council suggests we take out benefits and the word to, and we insert in its place the words impacts on. Senator Larson incorporates that. On the A-12 amendment, Senator Ma.
Mr. Chair, before we vote on the amendment, Senator Stumpf, I didn't quite catch on page 3, lines 24 through 28, what we were trying to do there. I'm sorry.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Senator Moore, on lines 3.24, allows the intermediate districts to increase their lease levy amount from $25 to $37. In the language of the education bill, we increased the lease levy from $100 to $150. And this allows the intermediate districts the same percent increase. On the lines 2.5 and 2.6, I believe that language goes back to the reciprocity agreements.
But she was asking about these here, and that's the measure.
Okay.
That's a fixed, technical fixed to the
Okay.
Page 3.
It doesn't go back to the reciprocity. It goes back to that's a technical fix for the Rushford-Peterson School District, which is the result of the flood impact aid that they received during the special session and then What the governor and the governor's proposal was to recapture some of the unspent money, and then he reappropriates that to those flood impacted districts that need it, and Rushford Peterson was one of those districts.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, members? On the Larson motion to adopt, Senator Sedgwick?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, could you just maybe cover lines 2-1 through 2-5 a bit, and particularly the striking of you may be voting for a property tax increase. In a situation like that, may there be a property tax increase? Or, I mean, you're just substituting language here.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, yes, I think the change, the rationale for the change was that when school districts would run referendums to renew an existing referendum, they were running into difficulty in getting referendums passed. And so what was suggested in Senator Saxhog's proposal was to, it's different than this existing language that you see in this amendment, because that pretty much tilted it that, you know, that it would not necessarily give the impression that there'd be any tax increase. And it did not really adjust for property valuation changes, for school pupil changes. And so it wasn't as accurate as it should have been. So what we tried to do in trying to overhaul that language was to be sure that the people who voted on this would understand that an existing referendum is about to expire, and that it would be what they're voting on would be the same amount that is in currently being assessed, which translates into, if it's passed, it would be a tax increase, because the existing referendum would expire at some point, and lots of districts are running these referendums maybe 2 years in advance of the expiration, because a lot of them have found out that these referendums fail. And so instead of, if they fail, they have to have another year to try to run that referendum, or their budget goes off a cliff. And so what the language basically tries to do is to lay out to a voting public that, yes, a referendum's going to expire, and if you and that it's going to be for the same amount as it currently is. I hope that it does that, but the old language did say that if you vote for this, you're voting for a tax increase. And the illusion is that it's over and above what you currently have.
Well, Senator Stump, depending on what's happening to an individual property owner's market value, there may be a property tax increase, even if you're just extending a current per pupil amount.
That's correct.
Senator Pogler.
Chairman, Senator Stump, why not put this all in the positive? Say you are renewing an existing property tax referendum that would otherwise expire. You are voting for the same per pupil level as in previous year, but this may be a property tax increase due to changing property tax valuations. Okay. That's the reality. Then you've told everybody everything they need to know.
But, Mr. Chair, if it wasn't expiring, those property taxes may be going up anyway just because of the formula. So it wouldn't change from that. It would be the same as if that had just continued on its own. And then like in my school district, we were getting a lot of the money on the bond issue from the state. We were even into that 75% state. Well, all of a sudden we got pushed out of the 75%, and we keep getting property tax increases simply because of the valuation increases. And that's going to happen, you know, and that will happen also in the excess levy, whether it's due to expire or not. So it doesn't change that.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stump, the original language says you may be voting for a property tax increase. May. And I think that it's kind of hard to be educating the public at the voting booth, in the ballot, on the ballot. And I also have an issue with it being in all capital letters. It's like, why are we doing this at ballot time when all the education should be prior? And the original language said you may be voting for a property tax increase.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson, I can't answer your question about all capitals, except that I think there must be some, maybe the Secretary of State or someone that has language that says that it has to be, you know, on a ballot question, it has to be emboldened or something. But on the other question, you're right. It does say you may be voting for a property tax increase. And from the testimony, it seemed like the illusion or the by not now remember, this is an existing referendum that's going to be renewed. It's not going to be increased. It's going to be renewed.
Senator Stump, I think our public is getting very, very savvy to what these referendum ballot questions are. And I think this long of a paragraph on a ballot just seems redundant.
It's renewed at the same people.
The original was passed
by Senator Squad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Stump and members, I guess I wouldn't, I'm not concerned about the individual market values of individual properties within the school district. As long as the levy, the total levy impact of the referendum is the same, I think the changes in the language is appropriate, because the total levy in the school district would not change. They're just extending the current levy. Now, how that levy is distributed among the properties in the district, I don't think we want to get into that in the ballot question. You just want to make sure that the total levy stays the same for the school district, and I think that's what you've done. Now, if Senator Pogemiller did have some language on line 2-4 and 2-5 to make that a little cleaner, I think what you said made some sense until you got off to where you were talking about individual properties.
Senator Pogemiller.
Senator Scoia, here's the problem, though. The original levy, the original referendum was based on a dollar amount. Depending on what's going on with property values and number of students in the district, your levy could be going up or down.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it is not accurate. I think it's not accurate to say, tell someone, if you vote for this, the per pupil amount will change from the previous year. It's only technically correct. Because if you are an increasing school district in number of students, the per pupil amount is going down every year at that referendum existence. And if your property valuations are going up, it depends what kind of district you're living in here. And I think the language of that in your center is misleading. I'm willing to maybe change it, but I think what's in there under your proposed language is not accurate. I mean, I think it doesn't tell anybody anything.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langstaff.
You know, I think we have to make it as easy as possible for them to extend it, because the absolute worst thing that can happen to a school district is they get used to spending at that particular level and all of a sudden there's a cliff and they just drop off. I've seen that happen to some school districts. I think it happened to the White Bear School District here. That's where devastation sets in. And they start shutting down schools and laying off massive numbers of teachers. So I think, however it's worded, we should make it fairly easy for it. We shouldn't make it more difficult for it to pass, because, boy, that's where the school districts just get into real bad situation if they can't extend what they had.
Mr. Nauman, help me understand something. Let me use St. Louis County Rural School District as an example. About 6 years ago, back when we equalized to $126 a student, or 8 years ago, whatever it was, they passed an excess operating levy up to that equalized amount in that year. What has happened since then? If the school district has grown tax capacity, are we still levying $126 per pupil, or are we levying the original X number of dollars that's spread on a larger tax capacity?
Mr. Chairman and members, in the $126 example, they would, assuming that they are still, that levy still exists, they would still be receiving revenue equal to $126 per pupil. There has been subsequent changes in law that changes where that equalization point is. But using your example, they still receive the district still receives $126 per pupil, but as the property values grow, the amount of that $126 that's raised off the levy would increase, and the amount of state aid would go down. So the amount of dollars to the district stays the same.
And, Mr. Nauman, is it if they've lost pupils, do they then collect only for the pupils that are currently enrolled versus what was enrolled 8 years ago?
The equalizing factor that's in law is a function of property value per pupil. So in a declining pupil environment with increasing property values, you kind of go in two different directions, and relative to the K-12 formula, the school district ends up looking wealthier. So that would make them that would pop them off the formula quicker.
Senator Skoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, so the dollar amount that's levied per pupil is changing based on the number of the pupils and the market value because of the equalizing factor?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, yes. I mean, I think one of the things to think about as you examine this language, and this is something the K-12 division struggled with as well, is the ballot question designed to provide information that reflects a static situation in terms of the school district, the $126 being constant? That's what the district is going to receive. Or is it designed to reflect full information for the voter, which should take into account the potential for declining pupils and changing property base? So the question is, what do you want to give them full information about? Or do you want to give them full information about both pieces?
Senator Pogomar.
Chairman, let me try this. On line 2.3, strike you. On line 2.4, strike are not changing. So that would be your operating revenue amount per pupil will remain the same as its level in the previous year. But your taxes may go up or down depending on changing property valuations. That's the reality.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's still too much information for the voting booth. It's just too much. I mean, if you can simplify it just to say, you know, you're extending an existing referendum, your taxes may go up. I think you need to simplify. You can't be educating the voter in the booth, on the ballot.
Well, the reality is, under the current law, they are going to go up if you extend the levy because they were going to go down. They were scheduled to go down. So if people vote for it, they are voting for a property tax increase because under the current law, when the levy expired, they should have anticipated their property taxes going down. And that's not going to happen if they vote for it.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Sundrum.
Why wouldn't the property taxes just remain as they were the day before you voted?
It's expiring.
Because the referendum is expiring, so
right.
Under the current law, with the referendum expiring, they can expect to see a property tax reduction, not only homeowners, but CI property. Senator Saxog, tell us why you think this is a good idea.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I realize this is the Tax Committee and not Education Policy or Education Finance. But the reason that, as you know, that what I proposed here was to take out maybe voting for a property tax increase is not because, as Senator Johnson says, that I want to educate the public. I really think it's a punitive phrase, and that if you're going to put that in, you should put, by voting no, you will there will be a good chance that your class size will increase and you'll be laying off teachers. You know, it makes about as much sense to me. And so I appreciate this this craft in language and would certainly go along with it because I think it's better than just saying you may be voting for a property tax increase. But I don't want us to miss the point about this, is that what we're really doing is making it harder to pass referendums and not really telling them, the public, what is the result of voting no.
It's over 90%.
Mr. Chairman, just
Senator Stump.
To add to it, I think now we've shifted to a good portion, or a portion of the school's budget is actually run on referendums. And I think about 90-some percent of our schools have referendums that they depend on. And all of the things that you said are true. I mean, the question boils down to, you know, what language do you put before the people? I mean, you can, I guess that's why I'm here.
Senator Skoy.
I'll take a run at it. On line 2-3, I would strike that would otherwise, and insert is scheduled to, and then do Senator Pogemiller's deletion of you are not changing, and start your operating referendum amount per pupil, and then insert may remain the same as the previous year. Market value determines the final effect on your taxes.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seemed like we're telling the people more than they need to know. I mean, I think just saying that the per pupil unit amount will not change, I think should be good enough, because if you're going to put this extra in there, and then there should be a little more extra, and then you're just confusing the public. If you're just saying that it will not change from what it would have been if it hadn't expired, that's the truth. And that, if you go beyond that, I think then you're starting to confuse people. We certainly shouldn't make it harder for them to pass an extension, because passing an extension is extremely important.
I mean, it's a little bit more clarified. This is kind of middle ground, just to say,
Mr. Chairman,
you're voting to renew Senator an existing Pogemiller. Property tax referendum.
Why not just leave it at the, you are renewing an existing property tax referendum that would otherwise expire, that is going to expire, and leave it at that?
Yes.
Mr.
That
Chair.
At least is accurate. The second sentence leads you to believe something that...
Mr. Chairman, I think that does the job, too.
Mr. Chair, I think that is what should be on there, because I don't think that's confusing, and it doesn't make it more difficult for them to pass it.
Let's let counsel make a run at it.
And, Mr. Chair, there's possible, perhaps, counsel to consider Senator Skoy's suggested language on scheduled to expire rather than... would otherwise expire. Seems more accurate as well, but I think that does fix this.
Counsel?
Mr. Chair, members, you could possibly even shorten that up a bit by on line 2 after R, delete renewing and insert voting to renew. And on line 3, put a period after referendum. Delete the remainder of line 3 and delete lines 4 and 5.
And it would read then what?
Then it would read, Mr. Chairman, Senator Langseth, then it would, the entire ballot question explanation would read, by voting yes on this ballot question, you are voting to renew an existing property tax referendum.
That's good. Good.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stump.
I think it might be helpful to have information that it is expired, that the referendum is expiring.
Instead of saying renew, we could say voting to extend. That would have that implication.
I agree.
Voting to renew an existing property tax referendum that is scheduled to expire.
Yeah.
Does the committee want scheduled to expire on there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure.
At least we're accurate.
Change
we're
this to extend.
Information.
It's a extend. I think it's a little clearer.
We're going to get the other information.
Council.
Let me just read the whole thing.
Why don't you read to us where we're what we're considering?
Mr. Chairman, members, the new language would be: by voting yes on this ballot question, you are voting to, and I guess I'd recommend extend rather than renew. You are voting to extend an existing property tax referendum that is scheduled to expire.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I think if you go beyond that, you're starting to confuse people. I think this is accurate, and I think it's as much as needs to be said.
And, Mr. Chairman, you delete the rest of that language.
Correct.
Mr. Chair, I will move that language.
Senator Langseth moves the oral amendment suggested by council. Committee, okay? Favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. On the Larson motion to adopt the A-12 amendment as a... renews and insert extend.
Extends,
plural. Senator Larson incorporates that.
Incorporated, Mr. Chair.
The A-12, as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A-12 is adopted. Senator Stump, on the bill.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, very quickly, the main provision in here is that what we have done is to recapture the QComp forecasted excess. Last year it was about $35 million that was not used. This year it's about $21 million. And then with that, we have, along with some cuts to few areas, have taken that money and have eliminated the subtraction of the school trust fund revenues that go into education. And what that does is it means about $35 to $36 per pupil, which is permanent money. It'll be there each year. Plus, it has a tremendous potential for growth. And Mr. Chairman, you've mentioned on occasion several times that the school trust fund lands and the university fund lands have great potential for growth because of the discovery of certain minerals and resources on those lands. In the future, that fund, as it grows, means that there will be additional money for education made available. And I'm going to have Mr. Nauman quickly go through the spreadsheet. We do come in with a negative levy amount, so he can explain that.
Mr. Chairman and members, I won't spend too much time with the aid spreadsheet, but since Senator Stumpf has mentioned a piece that carries both aid and levy, I will call your attention first to the aid tracking, and it's listed in your packet as the E-12-0809 budget supplemental appropriation tracking for Senate File 3631. And I think the most important lines for this committee are going to be the QComp limitation capture growth assumption, which in fiscal year 2009 saves $21.3 million. And then you can see it has a permanent tail of $28.7 and $29.5 million of savings. That money, as Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chairman, I just interrupt Mr. Nauman. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's the seventh column over from the left that we'll be working on. The difference, Senate, February line.
Thank you. Then on line 13, you can see the elimination of the permanent school trust fund subtraction, which generates money of $28.8 million, $29.9 million, and $30.6. The sharp eye will suggest that in 09 that those two don't offset each other, but there's a governor's recommendation of an advanced final payment, which is a final corrective measure that goes back to some of the shifts that we created back in the 02 legislative session. That's a cleanup, but it generates some savings. So those items together roughly generate the amount of revenue that are needed to accomplish this. The way this works, just briefly, is the revenues that spin off in the form of interest and and dividends from the permanent school trust fund are distributed equally based on the ratio of pupils that they have to the statewide average, to statewide pupils, evenly to school districts. So it distributes evenly without compensatory or sparsity adjustments. And as that grows, as the permanent school trust fund grows and sloughs off more interest, that will generate more money. And members can see that it's tracking on an upward trajectory already. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the big aid picture. The QComp also generates levy savings. So if I can ask you to flip to the levy tracking, if there are no other questions on the aid side. That's the other document, and this is one that I will spend a little bit more time on. First, going to the line 12, you can see that the column that I'm looking at is different Senate minus current law taxes payable 2009, which is the third column from the right. So you can see on line 12 that QComp growth assumption limitation saves $6.6 million in taxes payable 09 and grows to 7.4 in taxes payable 2010. There's also an accounting mechanism change that rolls districts and charters out of the general fund general education computation. So there are some savings on line 13 associated with QComp, but those show up in a subsequent line as a positive, so they really just are offsetting. Those are the big levy savings that are contained in the bill. I'll mention that the reciprocity that was included in the amendment that you adopted just a few minutes ago on line 7 generates a little bit of levy cost, $58,000 in pay 09. The bill also corrects one of the levy limitations that was imposed in the education accounts in the 2003 session on line 35. It fully reimburses the ICE arena costs. This was a Senator Wieger provision. Then the alternative compensation adjustment on the positive is line 40. A couple of fund transfers on line 54 and 55. Two things going on on line 57 is the increase of the building lease levy cap from $100 per pupil to $150. That's for school districts. And then this is also reflects the amendment to allow intermediates to go from $25 to $37 per pupil. That's 2.25 and 3.5 in taxes payable 2010. And Mr. Chairman and members, one of the peculiarities of recapturing that growth assumption and doing so in fiscal year 2009 is when that first becomes effective, is that as this committee is well aware, you can't really affect property tax levies until 2 years out. So in a sense, we get to double dip. And on line 68, there is the savings associated with the QComp growth assumption for taxes payable 2008. But this shows up as an adjustment. So there's a double savings there. Then, Mr. Chairman and members, looking to the next page, there's a small, on line 104, $6,600 adjustment for a small provision related to a fund balance correction in the Plainview-Elgin-Millville School District. A couple of offsetting changes associated with some of the capital payout schedules in this is a Stumpf bill on lines 117 and 118. Then, Mr. Chairman and members, on line 122, the Virginia School District has a fund transfer. And I'll mention that there are some fund transfers in the bill that don't have aid or levy costs, so those aren't tracked in the spreadsheet. But these are the ones that do have levy impacts. So in total, and this tracking does reflect the amendment, Now skipping down to, excuse me, line 169, the total certified levies post credits. This bill reduces overall property tax levies by $5.9 million in taxes payable 2009 and $3.7 million in taxes payable 2010.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nauman, could you answer a few questions regarding lines 22 through 26? The first question is severance. What's that? And specifically, what is line 26, reorganization severance?
Mr. Chairman and members, there are whole bunch of levies here in which no changes are being made, and you can see that in that column there are no changes being made to that levy. I believe that this is one of the smaller levies where when a school district, I might get this wrong, I can let Mr. Melcher correct me if I get it wrong. A school district consolidates or reorganizes, they are allowed to levy for some of the severance costs associated with that. But there are no changes to that levy in this bill.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nauman, we've been paying early retirement health insurance and health benefits, and then it starts to go away.
Under current law, there are no levy costs reflected under that levy at this. In the years that you're looking at.
And what is early retirement health benefits?
When employees retire early, there are some levies for those costs that school districts are allowed to levy for.
Any other questions, members? Amendments. Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, the staff would pass out the A11 amendment. And Mr. Chair and members, this amendment is familiar to you. We had discussion about this on the tax bill. I do have an oral amendment that I'd like to make on page 1, line 6. I think I need to reduce the 400 to 80 in order to bring it in line with the tax levy that's in the tracking for E12 here.
Senator Skoy incorporates on line 1.6, delete 400 and insert 80.
And Mr. Chair and members, this is the sparsity revenue for these large rural school districts. Many of these school districts are the 2,000 number school districts that have had significant consolidation. They're very large in geographic area. The cost for fuel for transporting them is eating into their general fund significantly, and I was trying to make a little help for these school districts.
Senator Skoy, so this would statewide, the levy takes the $3.7 million in QComp savings, spends that levy on this purpose. So statewide, the impact on school levies is neutral from current law?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nauman will have to do the final calculations, but I believe this will take the total levy effect to zero.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Nauman?
My hearing is not as good as it once was. Was it 80 or 8 that you instruct, you replace the 400 with?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, it's 80 for the school districts that are eligible for sparsity revenue.
Mr. Chairman and members, the rough calculations, would be a $4.7 million levy increase.
Senator Skoy.
Mr. Chair, perhaps I could raise that 80 to 100 if that calculation is correct.
Mr. Nauman, how much money do we have to in levy do we have to spend to not increase property taxes statewide?
Mr. Chairman and members, you do have a fairly intricate balance here, because if I can call members' attention to line 169, to the extent that you're attempting to remain on the negative side for both years, I would suggest that you really have about $3.7 million, because you get that double-diff savings from the QComp in taxes payable 2009, but that does not reoccur in 2010. So to the extent that you want to try to hit that, and if that's the judgment of the committee that you want to do that, we could back into whatever allowance hits that number, but that will leave a little bit more levy. In other words, you're going to have more savings in 9 than you would in 10 if you want to remain negative. If you're willing to go positive and you want to be negative in 2009, we can back into that allowance as well.
Mr. Chair and members, I think the 80 is a good number, and we'll stay with that.
Senator Dole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple points. One is I think there was some perception last time that there was a rural versus urban thing on this transportation issue. I don't think that's completely accurate. Minneapolis School District has huge transportation costs, quite extraordinary, driven by Minneapolis's responsibility to make sure that kids are receiving transportation, to privates, to charters, the open enrollment. Plus, we have a fairly complex system of schools. We have the alternatives. We have our own schools too. So we could use specific dollars for transportation as well. But I'll go back to the points I made the other day, and that is, look at the legislative auditor's report. I think the sparsity issue is a legitimate issue, and I don't know that the auditor's report points specifically to that. But school districts are not managing their transportation function well, and that's driving a lot of the costs. And we need to take some time and look at how well that function is being managed, being overseen by the Department of Education, Department of Public Safety, and how well school districts are managing that function themselves. So I'm not inclined to support this amendment at this point.
Senator Squire.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I don't know how the Bemidji School District is supposed to manage having students up at Balm Lake north of Debs, which is approaching 40 miles from Bemidji. Small number of kids. They still have to run a bus up there to pick them up. They have charter schools that they're responsible for school transportation for those students. Similar issues to what you would have perhaps on a little smaller scale, but these large rural school districts that are sparsely populated, the buses just have to drive a lot of miles to fill up, and with fuel like it is, it's a huge cost factor for them, and it's affecting the education that they can offer.
Senator Pogman.
Senator Stump, how much is in sparsity aid and levy now statewide?
Mr. Chairman and members, there is no levy in sparsity. In the Senate package before you in fiscal year 2009, $22.6 million of sparsity.
Aid.
And that's all aid.
So this would be the first time there's levy.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Pogemiller, this simply, they're not going together. In other words, it's not equalized under the language that you have in front of you. It just uses sparsity as a factor for determining which districts may levy.
So,
Senator Pogemiller.
Is the sparsity formula under current law an aid and levy formula? Or is it all aid?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Pogemiller, no, it's all aid.
So, Senator Skoy, if I could ask, First, let me say this is the right place to do it, unlike the last time, so this is fine. Why these particular districts rather than other districts?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, I picked these because they're buses driving so far between students, and it's very difficult for them to manage their way around having students that are very spread out. If you look at the 2,000 number school districts, which are all those consolidated school districts with that have been brought together, you know, many times those buses are traveling for an hour or two in the morning and in the evening just to get one busload of students, and it's very expensive, and that's kind of what I'm targeting after. I would have, if there was other resources available, I'd be happy to take a look at that. I did take a look at making this levy available statewide, but under the small number that we have for a levy target on the K-12 bill, it would have been, you know, almost nothing statewide.
Senator Pogemiller.
Isn't your argument, though, that the 22.6 is not enough money? The state aid is not enough.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, I would agree that the state aid is not enough.
Well, I'm just saying that's your argument. I don't know if it's enough or not. I'm just saying the argument is.
That's my argument.
Well, Senator Pogemiller, I think the issue is there is no additional money to put into sparsity. And I think we all recognize, I mean, largely the reason it's there is they're sparsely populated areas, and we recognize there's additional transportation costs in areas like that. And we all know what's happened to the cost of fuel, and the legislature's done nothing to recognize that. Senator Pogemiller.
But every school district, when their buses are driving around, the cost of gasoline is the same, so I don't see sparsity districts being disadvantaged in that. Every district's costs are going up, and we've recognized in our school formulas that there's an extra burden on sparsity districts to the tune of $22.6 million right now. And I guess I don't see the logic. That may not be enough money. May or may not be. But I don't see why these particular districts have any additional burden that others don't now because of cost of gasoline.
Senator Squay.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Pogemiller, it's because all of these formulas run through a per pupil basis, and their per pupils are so small in relation to the size that the amount of money the state is giving in transportation support and sparsity aid just is not enough. If we don't have any other resources, I'm trying to figure out a way for these school districts to levy this onto themselves. I would prefer other mechanisms, but, you know, and this is not the K-12 committee, but to be honest, in many of these rural school districts where they have a relatively small number of students, it's a huge problem just doing some of the base funding that they need for their school, just the lights, the administration, all of that stuff, because they don't have enough kids. Here we're trying to find a way for them to get a little support for their transportation costs that are eating into their general fund also.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Scoy, I agree with you, but I also agree with Senator Dibble. My school district imposed the two-mile walk. Everyone's got transportation problems. I think we need to put more money on the formula.
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scoy, if you made this one-time money for 09, I'd be more accepting. But I have a hard time understanding how this should become a permanent fixture in the formulas, because you're then turning a totally aid program into aid and levy. And then someone's going to want to equalize it, and then someone's going to want to make it statewide. That's going to be the path.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that's where you want to go, because today you've got a total aid program for those districts. But if you start down a path that says, well, this is really about just transportation costs, period, you're going to end up with a equalized levy, and then you're going to end up statewide, and then you're going to find out, I think what you're going to find out, based on studies that have been done, that the argument that's made by some rural districts that their costs are higher, I think you're going to find out that's not true. Because there was a lot of work done on this transportation stuff about 8 or 10 years ago.
Mr. Chairman, I think the work was in the early 90s and that the roll-in was in 1995, and that was the response to that.
And what we found out was that it was simply not true that some districts had these exorbitant costs relative to others. Because of the point Senator Dibble's making and because of what happens in suburban districts, because of the setup of suburban districts, they have to drive long distances to get, it seems like it's not that far, but they have to drive long distances because to get over freeways and stuff, you end up driving a lot of miles. So I'm not sure it is in rural Minnesota's interest to go down that path. And I think you'd be better off doing this for 1 year. Then at least the argument is, for this 1 year, we're willing to give more money to those districts vis-a-vis other districts. Now, that may not be persuasive to everybody, but it's a better argument than saying, I think, it's better than saying you want to permanently do it.
Well,
Senator Skoy, that, you know, that would get us to the next budget session, I guess. And I do think we've got to take a look at escalating transportation costs. They're not apparently not going to go down by the looks of the oil market.
Let's just make it for 09.
Yeah.
Senator Skoy?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if Senator Council could help me with the language that would make this one time for 09.
Strike.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, I'd suggest you delete on line and 8 thereafter. And delete on line 9 thereafter and insert only.
I would incorporate that.
Senator Skoy incorporates the oral amendment.
And, you know, Mr. Chair and members, I don't find particular satisfaction in carrying a bill to add to the levy in these school districts. It's just that we have to do something. And I think, Senator Pogramiter, you're making, you know, very valid points about how we're going to deal with these school costs in this state. And I think that if we don't figure out some way to bring uniformity to it, you know, we're at risk of not being in compliance with the Constitution on the uniformity issue also.
Senator Pogba.
Mr. Nauman, at the $80, that is still a negative in the current pay 9. But in pay 10, you're saying that would go 1 million positive then?
I'm saying, Mr. Chairman, yes, you have, to the extent that you want to have a static allowance and you want to remain on the negative side of levy, of the zero levy target, you would need to hit a $3.7 million levy number.
Mr. Chairman, that's, I just wanted to point that out. It's clearly up to you as the author of the bill. Do you want to be at zero or do you want to be positive in that up here?
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stump, maybe next year it would be really important to consider increasing transportation aid statewide.
Senator Stump?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Johnson, if you give me the resources, I definitely will.
Well, Senator Stump, I think what you're hearing is maybe the per pupil formula by itself isn't addressing some specific needs under the current transportation environment. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a question for Mr. Nauman. Now, we visited earlier before the hearing about my A13 amendment, which relates to a problem we have with elevators in some of our school districts because of a new interpretation of or a change in state building code that's a new expense that's not been a long-term budget item for those school districts. If we adopt this amendment, the amount of money on the bottom line that we had to work with is gone. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Larson, that's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Skoy also incorporates on line 1.3, delete the codification 126C-461. As long as it's just for 1 year, it doesn't need to be codified. on the Scoy A11 amendment as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion prevails. A11 is adopted. Other amendments.
Visit with Tom.
The other amendments, members.
We're going to find a different spot for it.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Larson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I had spoken earlier before the meeting to Senator Stumpf and raised an issue that I've just touched on here as it related to the Senator Scoy's amendment, and I think it highlights the fact that we've got needs.
He said it's almost
we have done, needs so. In our school districts that aren't being met, and school districts that are struggling to find a way to meet these needs. And so I've said that I won't offer the A13 amendment because we don't have all the figures that at today's hearing that show the impact of the amendment. But I would like to continue to work on trying to find a resolution to this issue because this is an undue burden for my school district, and we've solved some school districts' problems here this morning, but we've got other school districts who, and I presume that only scratches the surface for all the different issues that school districts have that would like to solve it in the same way. And so I hope as we move forward with the finance bill and through conference committee that we can try to deal with all the pressing issues that our school districts are facing.
Any other amendments? If not, Senator Larson moves that Senate file 3631 be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance.
Mr. Chairman, no, it would go to the floor as amended.
On the Larson motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Senate file 3631 is passed.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stump. Mr. Nauman, as always, thank you.
So we're up.
Hi, floor.
Hey, Rod.
Talking about.
Okay.